This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team over at 7Shifts. You guys may recognize that name because I had their founder on the show in July talking about the inception of what it is that they do related to labor management and staff management and scheduling. Great guy, great origin story related to growing up in the restaurants and solving a real problem for his family's business. You may also recognize their name because they were recently in the news because they just took a $20 million round of funding from the Union Square Hospitality Group, which those unfamiliar, it's Danny Myers out of New York City, his group that committed to work with the 7Shifts team and help fund their continued growth. For listeners of the podcast, you guys can check out the software for free for 90 days by going to 7shifts.com/restaurant-technology-guys, and they would love to talk with you. Great restaurant people, great technologists, and a really great product.
We thank you guys out there for all of those listeners that have either been longtime listeners or are new to the show. If you guys aren't aware, we're, 140 episodes or so in. It's been a fun journey over the last few years to get to know some of the audience. And more so than anything, from my perspective, is getting to meet our guests. And today is nothing different. I actually have known our guest for a little bit, but this is the first time he's been on the show. And I think you guys are in for a huge treat. I'm gonna say Michael, even though we're not gonna refer to him that way the rest of the time. He's better known as Shatzy to those in the industry. But Shatzy, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Tell them a little bit about who you are and kind of what you get to do for a living. Because I know your story continues to unfold week by week.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeremy. I appreciate it and love what you guys are doing over at the Restaurant Technology Guys. It's awesome. It's right up our alley. I am Michael Schatzberg and AKA Shatzy. It's just, you don't find too many Shatzys, but generally you find a lot of Michaels. I'm a third born. So I think my mom got bored of coming up with names and just went with the most popular name in 1967, which was Michael. So, Shatzy's great. We've been in the restaurant space here in New York City for, the past 25 plus years. We own and operate, several different concepts, all our own concepts. Mostly in casual dining and fine dining. We've opened some. We've opened quite a bit. We've closed a bunch over the years, but fortunate for me, we've opened a lot more than we've closed. We've been outside of the city over the years. We've been in Dubai and Kuwait. We've been in Boston. We've been in Chicago. But at the end of the day, we find ourselves New Yorkers, and we love doing business in New York City, and this is where we've been most successful. So we own and operate 20-plus restaurants here. In addition to that, we've become very, very excited about the technology space and innovation, and we've been investing in tech and innovation within the space over the last 4 or 5 years, so we're super excited about that too.
Awesome, awesome, and I know we'll get into that. So talk to me a little bit about the restaurants. You talked about it being casual dining, fine dining. What's your role? Are you the owner? Do you operate the restaurants? Kind of just for our audience that might not be familiar with you and kind of what you do on the restaurant side, what did you get the privilege of doing inside the restaurants on a day-in and day-out basis?
Well, I had the privilege of starting out as a bartender. And that for a lot of listeners, if you haven't bartended your life, you got to bartend because it's probably one of the best gigs you'll ever get. You make a lot of money. Everyone loves to talk to the bartender. The bartender really commands the room. Awesome. Started bartending. That was my first gig and I loved it so much. I was bartending at one of my friend's restaurants, who's actually my partner, and loved it so much. Ended up buying into the first restaurant, which was Duke's on 19th Street. And that was like a roadhouse. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just parlayed into becoming a partner. And sometimes I was operating and sometimes I was just a person to bounce ideas off of. I was a partner, but I wasn't an operating partner. And, you know, restaurants, sometimes there's too many chefs spoil the stew, as they say. So usually there's one partner who operates and the other partners may kind of take a back seat, maybe have meetings and throw some ideas around, but only one voice. So no one gets confused. Sometimes you walk into restaurants, everyone says they're an owner and it gets a little confusing. So that's the way we go. So right now, today, fast forward 25 plus years later, I am really not operating too many restaurants today. I'm very much involved in the overall arching kind of operations, but day to day, I really don't do too much operations anymore. I've given that up to, we've got a great team of general managers and office staff, et cetera, who do a phenomenal job. And it's allowed me to focus a lot more on the investment side of brand strategic.
I love it. I love it. And I know, and I guess first and foremost, that's great that you believe in your team. And I know that we'll get into it here in a little bit. I know when we first got introduced, Shatzi, it was really all around kind of how you could be a guest on the show. If I recall the story correctly, I remember you were an early adopter, even as a restaurant operator, well before you became an investor. Like, if I look back at the history of, you know, some of your posts and just kind of what you do, you've always been one of those people that's really dug in and tried to figure out how to automate your business, how to make it better through technology when you were in the restaurants even more often than you are today. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement. I got to say that I am the guy who always says yes. So in New York City, you know, give or take 25 plus thousand restaurants. If you were an early stage or, you know, an entrepreneur start, a founder startup, and you wanted to break into the restaurant space, an obvious place to do that would be New York City, you know, San Francisco, Chicago, some of the cities where there are just so many restaurants. So New York City was a place that a lot of guys who came up with ideas would come because there are so many restaurants. We've been around a long time, so it was very easy to find our restaurants. And if you found me and you pitched me, I wouldn't say it was a good idea or bad idea. I would say, let's try it. And I'll let you know if it's a good idea or a bad idea, because I'll try it in my restaurant. And I'll know from my managers, my bartenders, my chef, my kitchen staff, they'll let us know. And my customers will let me know if this is valid or not.
Yep. Yeah, no. And I love that idea. And I know that'll talk to the story of Brandon and kind of where you guys are at. As I was looking back through some of the, not just your posts, but even some of our previous guests, there's quite a few of our previous guests that you guys have either been early adopters of their technology and or early investors. I know Steve Simone has been on the show.
Love, I know the guys. Steve. He was here in our office yesterday.
Mike from Wisely was on the show before.
Big sale yesterday.
Yeah, no, I know. It was huge.
Shout out to Mike. 187 million.
Yeah, no, I sent him a text and I'm like, dude, because I ran into him at FS Tech when I last saw you. I was like, he and I were talking in the hallways and I had no idea. I don't know that anybody had any idea other than maybe people on the inside about what was going on with Wisely. But I know he's been on the show. Simone's been on the show. Good guy. I mean, I can go through the list, and I bet you if you look through the previous list of our guests on the show, there's probably 10 of them that, you know, you were either investors or you evaluated their product early on. So I love that that's been part of your history as an operator, that you were that guy that would kind of, you know, vet different technologies and see whether they worked and give them feedback. You know, even what I do professionally besides the restaurant technology guys, we always need those early adopters to tell us, is this crap going to work? Is it going to do what we want it to do? You know, I was in restaurant operations in the past, in high school and college, but, you know, you just never know whether it's going to actually work, if it's going to do what they need it to do. So I love that that's part of where you're at. Where did that foray go as it relates to Brandon? Why don't you talk a little bit about who Brandon is, what Brandon is, kind of what's that investment wing? What is that advisor wing to this tech stack? Because again, there's so many of our guests, so many of the people that are listeners of the show have either, you know, have tried these products because of the show. And I think you've got a really cool story to tell about how Brandon came about and even some of the people that you get to work with on the Brandon side, who's some of the founders over there.
Yeah, no, it's really it's a fun story. And I got to tell you, I am so blessed that I could be in an industry, the hospitality industry, which I love so much. And it has afforded me the ability to parlay 25 years in restaurants into now being an investor in technology and innovation within the space. And like you said, you know, we talked a little earlier, being in New York City, so many people, so many restaurants. I remember Open Table, a little startup out of San Francisco, probably around 23 years ago. opened a little office here with some salespeople, and I remember them knocking on one of our restaurant doors, City Crab, which is, it's no longer around, but that was an old restaurant, big seafood house, 350-seater, and they said, we have this reservation platform that you can make reservations. At that time, we only used, for the older listeners out there, it's the Red Book, which was your kind of your Bible at the front desk, and you kind of, you wrote down the weather and how many covers you had, and that's where your reservations were, and you put all your problems of the day and the night, and we didn't take reservations back then. Hey, there was, it was just, there weren't a lot of restaurants. When I say there weren't a lot of restaurants, there wasn't as much competition, you know? It was really just full service restaurants. If you didn't go out for dinner, the only place you can order in at home was probably pizza or Chinese food. And that was really it. So either, you know, your mom was cooking or you were going out. So restaurants didn't take a lot of reservations. And you just took, I had a waiting list and people came in and they waited at the bar. So that was our first foray into, I said, hey, let's try this thing and we'll use it for large parties like 6 and 8. And then we used a company called Seamless Web. Again, today it's Grubhub, and it was 20 years ago. And, you know, we talked earlier that a lot of people really are only just kind of getting into this online ordering, mobile ordering with their phones and what have you. But, you know, New York City, we've been using Seamless Web. And at the time we started using it, it was really an accounting solution for offices in Midtown Manhattan with these big offices and the, you know, the guys working there were working late or working long, you know, through lunch, and they wanted to order food. And it was a nightmare for the bookkeeping to know, what client am I billing this for? I'm ordering pizza, I'm ordering Chinese food. Who is this for? You know, and reconciliation. So it was really an accounting tool where after you order all this food, you can kind of identify what client it was, much like a copy machine in a law office works. You know, you can make all these copies and you put in the code, the billing code. That's really what it was. So we were using this kind of tech early on. And then we started embracing more and more tech in our restaurants, like accounting solutions and analytical solutions, like Compete, like Avero, like Hot Schedules, and using them for years. And we'd always talk to the founders or the people running these companies and just giving them suggestions and ideas to make the product better, because selfishly, I wanted a better product in my restaurant because that's all I cared about. I just wanted a better scheduling platform, a better reservation platform. And it wasn't until, and I'm a restaurant guy, so I don't know from investing. It really didn't come innate. I just wanted the best product to make my restaurants the best. And it was really a couple years ago, I'd say like 5 years ago, I want to say, where we had a restaurant on the Upper East Side that we were going to convert. We were going to renovate it and convert it to a new concept. And we're looking for something new and fresh and cool to let it stand out. And I had been reading in some of the trades, and this wasn't online. This was literally in, like, you know, the magazines that I would get. And there was a lot of talk about the self-pouring. And this is the same time where New York State had just raised minimum wage. A minimum wage order was going to come over the next like 3 or 5 years. I don't remember, but it was going to bump up each year, you know, incrementally. And so I said, you know, we got to find something that will be cool and neat, but also how about something that could help, you know, on this labor increase, because we're going to have to, you know, deal with that. And that's going to be hard. And the self-pouring was really cool. I met three companies doing it. One of the CEOs flew down, met them, loved them out of Chicago. And this company is called Pour My Beer. We installed this system at one of our restaurants, Duke's on the Upper East Side. We put in like 20 screens, and the customers could come into the restaurant, grab a card, and they can go to the screen and they could pour as much, as little as they wanted. And they paid by the ounce. So you can stand there, you could taste it, you could talk to people, and it was really engaging. You know, there was no loss, no waste. You paid for everything you drank. It helped alleviate a lot of the pain points on labor, because a lot of servers would go to the table and inevitably it's like, what do you want? I want a beer. What kind of beer do you have? And they would talk about the beers and they taste it. They'd bring it, go to the bar and or put the order in on the POS. And then the bartender would pour the beer and leave it at, you know, at the service area. And then the then the waiter had to get the beer and bring it to the table. It was very inefficient. So the idea of just sitting at a table and getting up and pouring your own beer, it's really fantastic. We loved it. It did everything we thought it would be. And I said to the CEO, I said, are you looking for investors? He said, yes. And that was our first investment. And from that, we just parlayed into today. We're at 27 investments later. We love the space. You know, restaurants and hospitality have not been early adapters overall as an industry to technology. I think the joke that we tell is I think the only industry slower to embrace technology is coal mining. And I think coal mining may have a leg up on us with this whole fracking thing.
That's so funny.
You know, I think most operators out there, you know, when you think about technology, they say, I have a point of sale system. Of course I have technology. Look at this. And that's it. And that's all they have. That's their tech stack.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and it's so funny that you say that. I was just looking while you were talking. The guy from Pour My Beer was on one of our original podcasts as well.
Josh
and
Goodman,
so,
awesome.
You know, so we've known those guys since their inception, and I love that. I love that you were always looking to technology to solve the restaurant operators' problems. And I guess before I move too much farther into the Branded story and kind of what you guys, you know, why you guys created Branded, speak to our audience of restaurant operators out there, because I think they need to understand why you decided to use these things. Because to you and I that are tech forward and aren't averse to these kinds of change, you look at it and go, you know what? It's a no-brainer. This technology exists. We're going to try it and see if it works. And if it works, then we're going to roll it. And, you know, I'm sure you can tell stories of Pour My Beer and how, you know, what it did for your business and how, you know, Hot Schedules or Open Table. I mean, these names that are now household names that everybody's like, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
You know, like talk to our operators about what things you did to make sure that you had a successful deployment. Why did you buck the trend so hard from these late adopters in the tech space as an operator? Because there's lots of them out there. And I think the majority are getting the message because we continue to talk about it every single week that says,
right,
you've got to do these things. And if you're listening to this, then chances are you probably are at least on the adoption curve, you know, a little bit earlier on than some of the late, you know, the laggards. But there are still people, there are still places where I walk in to even customers that we do business with and go, why do you still have freaking tablets sitting up front, not integrating to your point of sale for your third party delivery? Like, I just want to shake them. Yep. You know, I mean, that's just a simple little stupid example. But, you know, you clearly figured out the opposite. You were kind of the antithesis of what our standard operator is today, or even, you know, a couple of years ago, even more so. Can you talk a little bit about that before we jump into Branded and kind of what you're doing with Branded? Because I want them to also know and start to get aware of what you guys are doing at Branded, because you guys are doing some fantastic stuff there.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think restaurant operations is it's really, really hard. There are a lot of moving parts. And I'm not saying that other businesses aren't hard. It's tough out there. But restaurants in particular, I think restaurant owners and operators generally wear more hats than I've ever seen in any other business. You are a plumber, an electrician. You're a psychiatrist, a psychologist. You're a bookkeeper. You're a handyman. You're a creator, a chef. You're a graphic designer. You're a marketing person. You wear so many hats, and you have to do it all. And if you ask any operator, they'll be like, yes, I've had to fix toilets. I've had to fix light switches. There's so many things that could happen and go wrong in a restaurant, in a night or a day. You just don't have the ability and the luxury to say, oh, you know what, we'll close today and I'll wait for the plumber to come or the electrician to come or the designer to come or what have you. Sometimes you're busy, the place is packed, it's moving, the train's left the station, and you got to just keep going. So I just think that a lot of operators are just so focused on so many things of just operating the restaurant and putting out fires every day that the last thing that comes up is, let me explore new technology to help me do my scheduling or my inventory. It just doesn't come front of mind. We did some podcasts with the National Restaurant Association a few months back, like when the pandemic first hit. And the questions I got from a lot of operators, they didn't even know where to find some of these solutions. You know, a lot of operators don't have the luxury of going out to these trade shows and seeing what's out there. And all the luxury is sitting down and reading some of the trade magazines are going online. They're just really, really busy with a lot of operating of the restaurant.
That's why they should listen to the podcast. No, I'm kidding.
100%, because you could help them, you know, in 45 minutes and tell them what's happening. And I think that some of the bigger, you know, the multi-unit or the bigger chains or the bigger corporate guys are the ones that have the benefit of being able to go to a lot of the trade shows and see what's happening. And that's probably why they're a little bit more sophisticated on some of the tech. Not to say that they all are, but they probably have a little bit more. So I think for me, I was just always, I'm really lucky that I'm in restaurants in New York City, like I said. I got a lot of people knocking on my door. And it was just when a founder or an entrepreneur came in, I envied what they were doing because I think as restaurant operators, we are entrepreneurs. Each time we open a restaurant, it is another full-fledged business. It is just the whole thing. It's like starting over again. Hiring and training and the food and the build out. It is each time you do it, it is like starting all over again. And when a guy came in with an idea, you know, whatever it may be, order and pay at the table. I mean, I was testing this stuff out. It had to be 10 years ago that I was testing ordering and pay at the table. I knew that why would a waiter go to the table, take your order, write it on a Duke pad, go back to a terminal, enter it, and then it prints up in the kitchen. It just, the whole process is silly. But, you know, it just wasn't there yet. Now it is. Now it's like common practice, you know, to order by your phone, order yourself. It's just, you know, it's you know. So I think a lot of operators just, they weren't exposed to it, and they were too deep in the weeds to even recognize that it was something they had to pay attention to. And I really think that was the problem. And I think some operators, you know, when COVID hit, really got a punch in the stomach, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some were more advanced and were better along, and others were like, what? I didn't even know about anything about online ordering. I just thought it was Uber and that was it. And, you know, no one knew about white label delivery solutions, you know? So I think that, you know, overall operators and restaurants, we're creative people. Like I said, wear a lot of hats. Technology is not something, we didn't get into this business because we love tech. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a real tech geek, you're probably not getting into the restaurant business. I think there's probably a lot of other industries that you might consider. I mean, restaurants, it's creative. It's the food and beverage business. It's touching
it's
tables.
Hospitality too, as you've talked about. It's hospitality. It's dealing with
people. It's dealing being with people.
Out in the bar, being out in the dining room, talking to people.
Yeah, and that's what most operators, that's what they know. They love the creativity, the building the restaurants, the putting the menu together, the food, you know, and putting together cocktails and what beers am I going to sell. That's what we love about it.
Absolutely.
And technology was not something we thought about. Robots bringing out, making food. Who thought about things like that? Never. So, so that's kind of like what it was. It was just, you know, I think now it's becoming top of mind.
Well, and you're, you know, I mean, of the guests that we've had on, you know, the last 18 months as we've been going through this COVID deal, 2 years, you know, coming up on 2 years since all of it hit, you know, almost everybody has talked about the fact that historically restaurants have been laggards as far as the adoption. I would venture to say that that I don't want to say the script has completely flipped, but it's closer to some of the other industries where they are adopting tech. They're having to because it's either that or they're going out of business, I think, in certain times, which is a shame. But we have a lot of people that didn't get on this curve, you know, that are really struggling. And so I love that you were kind of early in that.
Jeremy, look at it this way. I mean, you ask anybody when the last time you went into a Walgreens or a CVS or a big supermarket, you know, Target, a Walmart, whatever it is, what was the last time that you saw any of those where it wasn't a tap and go pay or you inserted the EMV?
Yep, absolutely.
It's been going on whenever that PCI compliance deal happened. I'm going to say 5-6 years ago, but I could be wrong on my dates. But it is like they changed over like the next day.
Yep, absolutely.
You ask anybody right now when the last time you went to a restaurant and they gave you a check presenter and you put your credit card in, I guarantee it last night at dinner.
Yep. Yeah. You know, no, absolutely.
But yet you go to Europe and you go to the rest of the world. I just got back from Greece. There was not one restaurant. When I said I wanted my check, they came over with the little gizmo, device.
Little pin pad, and you had to insert your...
Right. So I don't know what it is. It's certainly not worldwide, the adoption. America's definitely had some challenges. Maybe it's just we love doing it the way we've always done it. But you take all these retailers, they are far, far ahead of restaurants and hospitality in technology. Hotels in so many ways, not every way, but hotels are far ahead of restaurants. And again, I don't have all the answers as to why. I know we're catching up, but that's just it's funny and it's interesting to see it. And when you start talking about it, you're like, yeah, why is that? I still put my credit card in a check presenter. And maybe it's because we got old legacy POS systems and we don't want to change because it's too expensive. Maybe the point of sale provider didn't bring it to our attention. Who knows? But it's starting to change now, which is cool.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. So let's dig into Branded. Branded, you know, you started 5 years ago. You talked about the history. What were you guys trying to solve? Like, are you trying to become the next, Google with restaurant technology? You know, is that, you know, kind of your guys' MO? Do you guys want to be at the hub? Do you guys just want to be an incubator? Do you guys want to own all of the tech and have that connection? Talk to me a little bit about what Branded's goals are, objectives are, other than the fact that, you know, it was cool to get involved in tech. And I know you guys have learned a ton, have a fantastic team, you know, at Branded that's going to do all of that kind of stuff. But talk to me about you talked about the inception, but what are you guys trying to do? Where are you guys going with that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. At the center, we are trying to identify early stage technology innovation that is really hospitality centric. What is really good for food and beverage operators around the world? That could be airports, that could be stadiums, that could be hotels, that could be restaurants, that could be gas stations and quick service and sea level. Anywhere food and beverage is served, we really want to identify some of the most incredible trends that are really solving the operator's biggest problems that will enable them to increase their margins so they can bring more money to the bottom line, which will help pay better wages and really have an overall better experience for the guest. And that is really what we're trying to do, is identify some of these companies. And then when we do identify these, after we vet and test them in our whole hospitality network, we then help to get them out into as many restaurant operators are out there, because we know if it solved my problems. And I always say this, if you ask an operator anywhere in the world, give me your 5 or 10 biggest problems, I guarantee you everywhere in the world, every operator has the same 5 or 10. Different order maybe, but it's the same 5 or 10 problems, probably in a different order depending, right? And I think that's our big thing, is when I find some, like when I talk to an operator, I don't care if you brought up POS integration with delivery platforms. You know, we started using Chowli years ago. We loved it. We invested. I tell an operator, I don't care if you use Chowli. I think it's great, but there are 6 or 7 companies doing a similar thing.
Absolutely.
Pick one that's right for you. But to have 10 tablets at a host stand with 3 people paying them, you know, whatever it is, $15, $20 an hour to manage tablets, what a waste of time and money.
Absolutely.
What a waste of time and money. So I think for us, we're looking to identify those companies that are really solving the biggest problems, and then making sure that we get those out into all the operators so they don't have to ask me, you know, how do I find the white label solution? You know, we want to be able to, through email marketing, through LinkedIn, through podcasts, let the world know that there are a lot of really great things out there to help you run your business more efficiently, more effectively, maybe being able to make some more money, that you can pay better wages, you can make some more money, and you could have a more successful business and a better experience, and maybe have a, you know, ultimately have a better, really just a better quality of life. Because, you know, restaurant operators, I mean, my wife and kids used to complain all the time. I mean, dad would leave at 7. Dad didn't come home till 8, 9 o'clock. I mean, that was just, and on the weekends, it was the same. An operator's life is just, restaurants are open, you know, I'm not gonna say 24/7, but maybe we're open 12 to 11, 12 to 12. But man, it starts at 7 o'clock in the morning, man. Prepping the food and everything like that, deliveries coming in. And then when the kitchen closes at midnight or 1 o'clock, it's not over, because that's when you got to break it all down and clean it all up and then start over again. So it just doesn't stop. So anything that we can help to make you more efficient, more productive, that's really what our big main goal is. You know, we're not the tech guys. We're not the guys creating the technology. I'm not the guy figuring it all out. We're just meeting some really, really smart entrepreneurs who are helping solve problems. And we identify that, and we just want to help get them some capital to help them grow. And then we want to help scale them and introduce them to as many folks out there And like I said, because if we think the solution is great, then I know my brothers and sisters in the hospitality industry will agree with me.
Yep. Yeah, no, I'd love that. And I think one of the things that you guys did is you guys are trying to cull this to kind of together in your in what you guys are calling the marketplace. Is that a fair assessment of kind of how you guys are trying to take this to the market? You know, you talked about getting it out on LinkedIn, and I see, you know, I'm connected with you and some of your partners, and you guys are constantly out talking about not just tech for tech's sake. I mean, again, the thing that I love that you guys are doing is you guys are putting it into your own restaurant, seeing that it actually does what it needs to do before you guys are going out and investing and sharing this with the world. But the other piece that I constantly talk about on the podcast is don't buy tech for tech's sake. Buy tech to solve real problems, to either give you back time, give you back money, give you back energy, you know, create a better quality of life. Those are the things that you need to be buying tech for. Way too often, I think one of my theories on why people struggle to adopt tech is there's a lot of tech that was touted as, oh, this is going to, you know, be the best thing since sliced bread early on, and people get burned. These operators get burned, and they don't have enough time. You know, you talked about it. They don't have enough time to even do what they're doing now, nonetheless invest in a secondary piece of tech or a third piece of tech that doesn't work. And yep. So I love that you guys are kind of calling it down to the stuff that actually works. Is that kind of how you guys are going to market, is through this marketplace? And tell me a little bit about what that looks like.
It's a great point, and I just wanted to add, I think that you have to identify, look, there's nice to have, and then there's you need to have and must haves. And you kind of got to ask yourself, when you're identifying technology and someone's trying to bring something in, do I have to have this? Is this a must have, or is it a nice to have? And you got to find out, because how long is it going to take to onboard it? How long is the training? And if it's just a nice to have and it's going to really disrupt your business and really take a lot of time and energy, then maybe it's not something you need to have right away if it's just a nice to have. But if it's a must have, I gotta have this because this is gonna save me money, or this is gonna really help me, you know, operate more efficient. Then, you know, that's the kind of things you have to identify. But the marketplace you brought up, the branded marketplace, was really something that we came about when we recognized how so many operators didn't really know where to find the tech that they need. Mm-hmm. So we came up with the marketplace, was just, and it's free. It's free for operators to use. It's free for the tech companies to be on the marketplace. It's just literally a place, a directory where you can go and find very quickly, but you know, there's 35 or 40 categories, and you can just sort through, and there's multiple, you know, it's not one size fits all in this business. There's multiple point of sales, the multiple white label delivery, there's multiple inventory, there's multiple payment processors, there's multiple platforms, and you can just go and find and then start searching. It directs you to the website of the company. It will give you a lead, you know, it gives them, you can email the company, they get back to you. You can get a conversation, get a demo, and then start finding, is this what you're looking for? Is this what I need? You know? So it's really just a first stop to start the process of identifying who the players are in the different verticals. And let me start talking to some of the leaders in these different spaces and find out, you know, is this right for me now? Do I need this? Is this for a multi-unit operator, or is this for a single unit operator? I have my one store, but you know what? I know that it's doing so well. I want to open 3 or 4 or 5. Okay, well then maybe you make sure that whatever tech you're investing in, make sure it can handle that type of vision, you know, that it's not just for a single unit pizza place, that it's for a guy who's going to have 5 pizza places. And then make sure that the tech that you're looking at, you know, speak to some people who are using it and say, hey, how many stores do you have? I have 5 pizza places. Great. I'm thinking about opening up a couple more. I just wanted to make sure, oh yeah, it's growing with me. Talk to people that are using it. Don't just take the salesman who's selling you the tech's word for it. Talk to fellow operators. Look, absolutely. Fellow operators, as we all know, are incredibly generous. We all help each other out. I know in New York City, if I'm out of napkins, I go to the guy across the street, he's giving me napkins. If someone's out of a case of Corona, I'm giving you a case of Corona. We share, we do it. All, our neighbors, we're all friends. If one restaurant guy is doing well, then usually everyone in the neighborhood is doing well. And so we're extremely gracious and generous people, as we all know. And if you call up any guy who's working with a certain tech, they'll be happy to talk to you, because that's what we love to do. We love to help each other out. It's just, it's in our DNA. We're hospitality people.
Absolutely. It's so true. It is so true. And again, I mean, you guys don't need any help with any of the marketing, but I love the idea of, you know, kind of for restaurant people, by restaurant people, you know, you guys are kind of in that space where you guys are looking to solve real problems for real restaurant operators. And so,
Jeremy, I'll tell you one last thing. We really do believe that it takes a village, and that's not just, nonsense. It really does. It is a big industry. It employs more people than any other industry in this mm-hmm. country. It generates tremendous amount of revenue in taxes and in et cetera. It employs not just directly through, you know, back of house and front of house, indirectly through linen companies, exterminators, the guys who sell the soap, the guys who clean the windows, the guys who sell the beer, the wine, the produce, the groceries, the farmers. I mean, it is such an enormous industry that it just has to be healthy. It has to stay healthy because so much is at stake with the hospitality industry. If you really think about what hospitality is, it is ginormous. It's the biggest industry in the country or in the world. It really
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't want to say it's only getting bigger. I mean, the truth is less and less people. I mean, I talk about a statistic for the first time in 2019, food spend, and this is pre-pandemic, food spend in restaurants eclipsed food spend in the grocery stores for the first time ever in the United States. And you know as well as I do, that trend is only going to continue, started with places like New York and Chicago and these high-density places where people aren't cooking as much. They're going out to eat. They're, it's part of life. It's part of, you know, work. It's part of life. It's part of what you do is you're constantly eating out. And to your point, it is something that has to remain healthy for the economy, for the rest of the country, not just for the restaurateurs that are owning these places, but for everybody.
Oh, the supply chain that touches restaurants. I mean, I don't have the numbers, but I mean, you talk about, like I said, groceries and produce and all this, the beverages that we're drinking, everything else that goes on in a restaurant, printing menus and the guy who makes the tables and the chairs and the booths and the guy, the lights. And it is so many people that touch restaurants and hotels and airports and stay. It's so much. It's incredible. And I'm just, like I said, I'm really fortunate to be in such a fantastic industry.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm going to shift gears a little bit and ask you to look into your crystal ball. I'm going to pivot here for just a second, Chazzy.
Okay.
Give me one of the sleepers of a piece of tech in the restaurant industry that you think is underrepresented as you go out and talk with restaurant operators, as you talk with people. You know, you talked about early adoption of things like OpenTable. I mean, to me, OpenTable is a ubiquitous word within the world of restaurants. Mm-hmm. Hot schedules and labor scheduling. Yep. You know, something like Chowly to be able to do third-party delivery aggregation. Where do mm-hmm. you think the sleeper is where people just really haven't caught on to the tech? Is it that pay at the table that you alluded to earlier? Is it kiosks and people doing their own ordering? Give me some thoughts on where those sleepers are in the industry where you think 2-3 years from now, people are going to be like, oh my gosh, I don't know why we didn't do this sooner.
I think right now the buzz around the business is customer engagement. And I think to have customers come into your restaurant or order online, any type of, they're your customers. And for you not to know who they are and engage mm-hmm. with them is just crazy. It's crazy. So customer engagement, you know, we started using a company called Ovation out of Salt Lake City.
Yeah, Zach's a good guy.
You know Zach, great guy. We started using that company. We ended up investing in the company. And I got to tell you, there are other companies that do the engagement. But to make sure that you find out how that experience is, both off-prem and on-prem, good and bad, you have to make sure that you're engaging with your customer. Retailers, as I said, have been doing it for years. They know you get, you know, you go to Pottery Barn, you go on that Pottery Barn website, you're going to get an email, yep. you know, hey, you put something in your basket, but you didn't buy it. Are you still interested? You know, and then when you buy something from Pottery Barn, I'm giving a plug to Pottery Barn. I don't own any stock in the company, but I'm just using an example. You're going to start getting emails from Pottery Barn. Hey, you bought this couch or this pillow or whatever. Have you looked at this? You might like this. Retailers have been doing it for years. Restaurants should be doing the same thing. You ate at my restaurant yesterday. You had pizza. You know, you know, we should be marketing pizza to that family or that guy. You know, how was your experience? Tell me, was it good? Was it bad? What, you know, what did you like? What didn't you like? You don't want people going on Yelp. You want people in, that's your customer. You want to know what's going on with your customer. What do they like? What don't they like? And keep, you know, specials, promotions, whatever it is.
Yeah, where do they like to sit? What is their patterns? They're coming in for a business dinner. It's a different experience than when they're coming in for a date with their wife. It's
data,
amazing.
Yep. So data analytics.
Google and Amazon have all of this stuff on us, and we have no idea when people walk into our dining room what it is, who they are, unless you're the host and you know that guy. And you know, everybody loves that Cheers example of like everybody knows your name.
Yep.
And in the old school restaurants where the host is the same guy that's been there for 40 years, you get that, but you definitely don't get that most places anymore. And I love the idea of going after the data.
Yeah. And that, so data is really, really important. And then when you get the data, what do you do with it? So a lot of people, I don't know, I'm a restaurant operator. There are companies out there like a company like Targetable, for example, which takes that data and helps you do better on your Instagram and Facebook ads, which really ties into engagement. Because why am I going to send an Instagram ad and pay for it of a steak, a delicious steak with red wine, to a vegetarian?
Yep.
And that just sounds like a waste of time, a waste of an ad. So yeah. I want the vegetarians to get my vegetarian kind of things. I want the people who like to drink, you know, whiskey, get the whiskey stuff. And, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff's been going on. Like you said, Amazon. I mean, you know, when I was buying a book on Amazon, you bought this book. Why don't you look at that book? Mm-hmm. Restaurants should be doing the same exact thing. And there's tech out there that helps it. And that, to me, it's in its most early stages. But that, to me, is what's really, really important. And I think we're seeing a lot more of it. And it's not, and I think customers like it. Some people find it creepy, but I think I like it. I know my wife loves on Instagram when she gets, you know, an ad for, you know, a top or shoes or something based on her preferences, because
absolutely,
it's not a waste of time for her. She's like, oh my God, I really do like that top. Of course you like that top. We knew you would like that top. We have algorithms that told us you'd like that top. So restaurants should be doing the same thing.
That's so funny. And I think you're right on with that idea that that's something that is well underserved within our industry. And I know you know this, there's a lot of restaurants that are already doing it. And so if you haven't considered it, you need to get on it, because there's people that are passing you by that are sending ads to people that are relevant and timely so that they can get that customer into their doors rather than yours.
Yep, exactly. So that, I think, is something that's top of mind for a lot of operators, and you really got to get into that.
Love it. Love it. I have one last thing, and then I'm going to let you kind of plug how people get engaged with you guys. I didn't realize that you guys had a podcast until today. Talk to me a little bit about where that came from. Was it just a marketing thing to get the word out about the brands that you guys are working with? I don't know how much of it you participate in, or if that's just kind of a branded thing. Talk to me a little bit about the podcast world, and what will people find if they're a longtime listener of the Restaurant Technology Guys, and they go check your guys' stuff out?
Yeah, we're having a blast with our podcast. It was really born out of, I don't have to tell you because you do a podcast, but podcasts kind of, became popular, and we were looking for ways to continue to help us market some of our partner companies. That's kind of how it started, is we'd invest in a company that we get the CEO on the podcast, and that would be a great way to get people to know about it. And now it's evolved quite a bit. And now the podcast is really, it's me, the restaurant guy, and my partner, Jimmy, who's the finance guy. And it's really us talking to kind of movers and shakers in the business. So it's not technology. It could be someone who's running a big restaurant group, someone who's running a single unit. It's someone who has a tech company in the space. It could be people financing some of the tech companies. It could be people financing restaurants. So it's bankers. It could be tech guys. It could be, it's really just the movers and shakers and leaders in the hospitality space, not just technology. It's on all angles. It's the beverage people, the food people. And it's really just a 30-35 minute chat. And it's really just about their take on a couple of things about the industry and really just having a really great time in it. We're getting a great time with it. We're having a lot of fun, and it's getting a lot of traction, and people are having a good time because it's short and sweet, mm-hmm. and it's not really, it has a broad focus. It's really touching a lot of people. So that's kind of like what we did it. And it really, now it's, like I said, it's expanded to, it could be, I mean, I know we had Zach Goldstein from Thanks on. I didn't invest in that company. I had Abby from Bicky on, didn't invest in that company. So it has nothing to do with just companies we invest in. These are just people that are making things happen in the hospitality space. And it's another way of getting hospitality operators and owners to be aware of some of the great companies that are out there to help them in operating their business, you know? It's not just companies that we're involved with. It's just anybody who's doing great stuff out there. I mean, the guys from DoorDash on, I had the guys from Olo on, you know, guys from Par Brink on, the guys from Toast POS on. It really doesn't matter, you know. It's just doing good things.
I love it. Well, now it's time for you to plug. Kind of, how do they get connected with you, Shatzi? How do they get connected with Branded? How do they get connected? You know, give me some names, even of some restaurants for those that travel or live in the city, that they can go check out the restaurants that you guys own.
Yeah, great. Appreciate it.
So give your plug of everything that you guys do, because I want these guys to engage with you. Because if you're not connected with them, you don't know what they're doing. You would serve yourself right I've said this, and I'm not saying this to BS people. I don't have people on the show that I don't believe in what they're doing. I really, really like what you guys are doing. I love that you guys are trying to help the space. I'm a firm believer in the idea that you know, the sum is greater than the parts, and you know what, let's get more and more people out there aware of these things. And if you're not doing Chali, there's something else out there that's going to be able to help you get these things done. And what you said, so
you call me and I'll give you, if you don't like Chali, you don't like the color, the logo, you tried it, didn't work, I'll give you five other companies. Because as an operator, I don't care which one you use, just find one, because you got to. So look, I said it before, it takes a village. It's a very fragmented industry. I've never seen an industry so fragmented. If you think about airlines, you know, there's five. Think about hotels. There's four or five. In restaurants, there's a million restaurants owned by hundreds on hundreds of operators, you know. Mm-hmm. At McDonald's, let's say McDonald's and Starbucks are the biggest. But there's 50 McDonald's. You know what I'm saying? There's McDonald's, there's Burger, there's CK, there's so many. So it's very fragmented, and that makes it more difficult. But look, if you want to get in touch with me, it's Shatzi at Branded Strategic. I'm on LinkedIn all the time, loving LinkedIn. I try and get back to anybody who links it, who messages me. I try and get back to them as fast as I can. You can check me out on LinkedIn. BrandedStrategic.com is our website. You can check it out. Our podcast, you can check out on the Foodable Network. If you have 30 minutes, you want to listen and have a couple of laughs, it's really not serious. It's just fun. We have a lot of laughs. And I think that's it. You can email me, check out our website. If you want, if you're thinking about investing in the space, would you like to get involved in investing in the space? Come talk to us. We are avidly always looking for like-minded folks. If you're thinking about, you know, want to get on the marketplace, you can just email me. It's themarketplace@brandedstrategic.com. If you're a tech company, wanted to get on there, it doesn't cost any money to get on there. And all we're hoping to do is generate leads so you can help restaurant owners out and get them some great tech, because we desperately need it. And and if you're an operator and you're looking for tech, go to the marketplace and check it out. Doesn't cost anything. So it's a lot of things. We're doing a lot of stuff. We're having a lot of fun. And I go to all the shows. I'll be at RFDC. I'll be at Food on Demand. I'll be at RLC. I'm there. Love to have a drink with anybody. Just email me. I love having drinks with people.
I love it. True hospitality guy at heart. Shatzi, I can't thank you enough for, you know, the last 45 minutes or so that we've been recording. It's fun to finally get on the podcast and kind of hear more of the story. I've heard it, but I really think it's worthwhile for our listeners out there to hear about what you guys are doing, and quite frankly, take advantage of a lot of the free information you guys are putting out there to help make their lives better.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This was great, Jeremy. Really awesome.
Yeah, no, and to our listeners, guys, we know that you guys have got thousands of choices of podcasts, and it feels like there's new ones every day. We appreciate you guys listening. You know, while you guys are out on the internet browsing around, you know, scrolling Facebook, checking out the Branded Marketplace, you guys go give us a rating on your favorite podcast player, because it lets other people know about the show. Share it with your friends. Shatzi, thanks again, and to our listeners, guys, make it a great day.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.